say in a moment, they give a different interpretation also to the word keva. Okay?
Chav Zayin Amud Beis, right?
Right. And you see over here where it says Tfilas HaErev
and
Keva.
Right.
All right, so we'll stop over there. So the first question they want to know is, what is the meaning of the Mishnah when it says Ein Lo Keva? What does it mean? It's not fixed. So Ilemo, if we are to say that the meaning is the boy Matzle Kuli Laila, that if he wants he could daven all night long, he could say Shemin Esra. So in that case, they say Lisne, then let the Mishnah teach Tfilas HaErev Kol HaLaila. You know, with chakras, they said, you know, Tfilas HaBoker Ad Chatzos, all right? And then, of course, Rabbi Yehuda said, no, it's only Adar Abashar, all right? And then with Mincha, again, you know, there's the difference. I mean, they said, you know, Ad HaErev, the Chacham said, and he came in with his business only Ad Plak HaMincha. And that we explained, you know, that means until the end of an hour and a quarter prior to sunset. And at that time, according to Rabbi Yehuda, So Mincha time is over and automatically Ma'ariv could begin at that time. And so from there, if you remember, we went into the business about the fact that Rav would daven Erev Shabbos early. And so they went into a discussion of that and they finally decided, yes, that it is permitted to daven early. But the question is, in that case, do you have to accept upon yourself all the dinim of Shabbos?
At that time.
Right, at that time. If you daven early, and of course the answer is yes. And the fact that they mentioned one incident where it didn't happen that way, so they explained that was an unusual
case. When he went into the, yeah, like David said, he went into the Schwitz.
Right.
And
right.
He didn't go.
Right. And it was before they passed the rule against it. Okay. Right. They didn't go to Beit, but only to Schwitz. And they figured, you know, Schwitzing is not so gefährlich. There's no real glycerin, right?
Yeah.
But then they said also that it was before they passed the ruling against going into the bathhouse, even to Schwitz. Okay. So now we come to Ma'ariv and we say, and the Mishnah says simply, Tfilas HaErev Ein Lo Keva. It has nothing, literally nothing fixed about it. So they're saying now that what do we mean by this word Ein Lo Keva? If we are to say that you can daven all night long, then in that case, why doesn't the Mishnah say the Tfilas HaErev Kol HaLaila? That the
you can daven all night
long. You can daven all night, right. Elamai Ein Lo Keva, but rather, what is the Mishnah trying to teach us by saying, you know, Ein Lo Keva? So he says, Command Omar, this would be in accordance with the Talmud Chochem, and in accordance with the rabbi who said Tefilas Arvis Rishus, who said that the Shemone Esrei of the evening service is voluntary. In other words, it's not obligatory. Shacharis is obligatory. Mincha is obligatory. Musaf would be obligatory. Maybe not. Of course, the Gemara is going to discuss whether it is or it isn't. Okay? But certainly as far as, you know, Shacharis and Mincha is concerned, that's obligatory. But there is an opinion that says that to recite Shemone Esrei in the evening is only voluntary. Why is it voluntary? For the simple reason, if you remember, that if you say that it's in accordance with the Karbonos, okay, so we know that there is, in the morning they had a morning sacrifice, in the afternoon they had an afternoon sacrifice, right, Beit Harbayim. And of course with Musaf, again, we had special sacrifices on those days when Musaf was required. And what do they cite as being for Ma'ariv? The fact that the various, let's say, bones and sinews and fat and stuff like that that had not been consumed on the altar previously could burn all night long. But, you know, that is not in the same category, right, as saying that you must sacrifice this and this, you see. So therefore there is this opinion then that Tfilas HaErev is reshus, that it's only voluntary. And they now they cite the authorities. The Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel, as Rav Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, of course remember these are already Amoroyim, in other words these are Talmudic authorities, but not of the earlier generation who would be the Tanoim. And what did they say? They say Tfilas HaErev said, as far as the Shemone Esrei of Ma'ariv is concerned, good evening, David. Rabbi Gamliel Omer Chovah, Rabbi Gamliel says that it is obligatory. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Rishus, Rabbi Yehoshua said that it is only voluntary. Omar Abaye, the Abaye said, Halacha kedibrei ha'omer chovo. He says that the halacha taka follows the opinion of the one who says that it is obligatory. The Rava Omar, but Rava said, Halacha kedibrei ha'omer chovo. He says that the halacha follows the one who says that it is only
voluntary.
So,
it is voluntary. So there's a difference
of opinion. Yeah. Of course, the question is, so, you know, how does the, you know, how do the codes, how does the Rambam, how does the Shulchan Aruch paskin? So the answer is that Taka, theoretically,
it is voluntary.
But everybody has accepted upon themselves that
It
has become obligatory because everybody has accepted it.
But what isn't Marav a rabbinic ordination?
This would only apply to to the Shmon Esra Marav. Would not apply to the fact that we have to recite Krishma at night, because there we follow the fact that the Torah says, you know, the Mishach B'chov Kamehameha, right? When you lie down, look at my eyes up. So,
right.
I mean, in order to fulfill this, so we have to recite Shema. And since we're reciting Shema, we have to recite the brachas before it and the brachas after it. You know, Amar Barovim and Abba Salem, and then following it, Emes Be'abuna Kozos and, you know, Hashkivenu.
Well,
okay.
Wouldn't you also be fulfilling that obligation when you say the Kriya Shema before going to bed?
Yes, but you would not be fulfilling the fact you should also recite the brachas before and after.
Well,
that's
you say Ashkevena in the Shema.
Correct. It's been added. It was never obligatory. It was added in order to give a little more substance, shall we say, to the Kriya Shema before you go to sleep at night. Okay. So they took that, they took Yirineinu and so on, you know, plus additional psukim and things like that, okay?
Yehuda wasn't Yehuda.
But
right?
Notice, I mean, even when we say Hashkivenu
and Yirineinu,
we don't say the bracha. You see, that's the difference. No, thank you. All right, so...
Did you hear David's question?
Well,
no,
I'm sorry,
I didn't.
I came in late, I pressed... Rav Yehuda is not
No. Rav Yehuda is already a later authority.
Okay.
Yeah, he was a Babylonian authority. And obviously he must have been a disciple of Shmuel, who was also a Babylonian authority. Of course, Shmuel had studied in Eretz Yisrael, and then he went to Babylonia and founded his own yeshiva. Okay. And But Rav Yehuda was already a generation, let's say, so after Shmuel, and you know, both of them quoted continuously in the Talmud. All right, but here he quotes as his authority Shmuel. But who did Shmuel base it on? So he's the one who quoted the fact, you know, in the yeshiva, you know, that this was a difference of opinion between Rabban Gamliel, who said it was obligatory, and Rabbi Yeshua, who said it was voluntary. And then two other Amoraim, Abai and Rava, disagreed also about this. So what was Abai's opinion? Abai's opinion was that it was Chovo, and Rava said, no, the halacha follows Gedivrei Homer Rishus. You know, it follows the opinion of the one who says that it is voluntary. All right, so...
Yeah.
All right. So Tana Rabbanim. So now that you know, they started on the question as to whether it is Vishus and Chovah, and of course, who were the earlier authorities cited? The earlier authorities were Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. So now they go into this in greater detail. Tana Rabbanim, our sages have taught, Maase b'Talmid Echad Shebolof Rabbi Yeshua. Story about a certain Talmud who came. In the presence, he came to Rabbi Yeshua Omalo, and he said unto him, Tfilas Arvis Rishus Okova, says, tell me, is, you know, to daven the Shmon Esra Meir, is it voluntary or is it obligatory? Omalei Rishus. So he said unto him, it is voluntary. Bolapne Rabban Gamliel, and then he came before Rabban Gamliel, and he asked the same Shai of him, right? He's so Malay, so Rabbi Gamliel answered him, Tfilas Arvis Rishus, excuse me. The disciple said to him, Tefillas Arvus Rishus of Chovot, tell me, he says, is the Mairav, you know, is it voluntary or is it obligatory? So he said to him, Chovot. So what did this wise guy say to him? He says, Valo Rabbi Yeshua Mali Rishus. He says, look, didn't Rabbi Yeshua tell me that it's voluntary? So needless to say, Rabbi Gamliel is obviously offended by it. And remember, what was the position of Rabbi Gamliel? He was ahead of the Sanhedrin, exactly. So he felt very offended, you know, by the report that Rabbi Yeshua was disagreeing with him in this particular matter. So he said unto the student, he says, "Hamteinat shekonsu balei trisin in the base hamidrash." He says, "Wait until literally the shield bearers, in other words, the great." Talmidei Chachamim come and enter the base medrash. Yishenichdesu balitrisin, and then when they came in, so Omar Hashoel. Then again, this person who had asked the question got up on his feet, Vishawal, and he asked the following question: Filas Arvis Rishus Sokova, is the Shvanesra of Myrav voluntary or is it obligatory? Omale Rabbi Gabliel Chova. So Rabbi Gamliel said to him, it is obligatory. You must recite it. Amalahem Rabbi Gamliel Chachomim. And then Rabbi Gamliel turned to the Chachomim and he said, Klum yesh adam shecholek bedavoseh. Tell me, is there anyone who disagrees with me in this matter? Amalahem Yeshua lav. So Rabbi Yeshua answered him, no. Amalahem. So he said unto him, Alo mishimcha omruli rishus. So he says, look, didn't they quote you and tell me that you are the one who says that it is Rishus? Omalei, he said to him again, Yehoshua Amor Raglecha, he says, stand up on your feet, be your Yidubacha, and let them testify against you. Okay, here we have to understand the procedure is that if a person gives witness, he has to stand in the presence of the judges. Okay, so since he's asking Rabbi Yeshua, you know, to give testimony, so he has to tell. So he tells him, you know, stand up so that, you know, they can bear testimony against you. Omad Rabbi Yeshua al raglo, so Rabbi Yeshua got up on his feet.
Excuse me a second. If someone is testifying against you, you have to stand.
Yeah, but also you are being accused of something, right? That's really what the situation is over here. You're right.
No, it's not
right.
I'm trying to ask.
No, in either case, when
so
you're before the Besdin, right?
Stand, and if you're the accused, that's
and if you're the accused, you have to stand, right? Exactly. Okay. Yeah, correct.
Well, he asked him to stand and respond because he knew he had given the opposite opinion.
Yeah, he knew, correct, because
the Talmud
right, he said, you know, they told me that you were the one who said, you know, that it is Rishus. So he says, stand up, let testimony may be given, you know, against you. Omer Rabbi Yeshua Raghav. Yeah, right. You know, correct. I mean, Torah says, Yabdu Shnehu Anoshim, okay, that the two of them are to stand up. So this is it, either as witness or as the accused or whatever it may be, or as a litigant. I mean, when it's your turn to give testimony, you have to stand up. Okay. As an aside, you remember that you know, like Erev Yom Kippur, some place to do it every Rosh Hashanah, we have what we call Hatoras Nedarim, you know, the release from vows that you may have made recklessly during the course of the year. And again, what do? You have to stand up while the Besdin is seated. You see, so it's a throwback to the same idea that we have over here. Omar Rabbi Yeshua Raglov. So Rabbi Yeshua, he got up. Yomar, and he said, Ilmole ani chai v'hu meis. Look, he says, if I were alive and he were dead, in other words, you know, the person who testified against me, then yokol achai l'hachachishas ameis. Then in that case, the living person can contradict the dead person. But v'yakshav, now, however, shani chai v'hu chai, that both of us are alive, I and he, so hech yokol achai l'hachachishas ameis. How can a living person contradict another living person? you know, and say that the testimony was false. In other words, I might have tried to gloss it over if there were no witness, but since there is a witness, I cannot in all honesty, you know, deny it. Mm-hmm. I have to tell the truth. Oya Rabbi Amdiya Yoshev. Now, in the meantime, he's already on his feet, right? So Rabbi Gamliel then was sitting for Doresh, and he was teaching, you know, the lesson for the day. Rabbi Yeshua is standing on his feet all this time. Ad Shemininu Kol Ha'am, until all the people began literally singing, but it doesn't mean singing, what it means is that they began murmuring. Okay? The Yomru, the Chutzpis, Haman Turgamon, and they said the Chutzpis, the Turgamon, he says, Amod.
Yeah.
Which means over here either stand, or it could also mean stop in Hebrew.
Did you get back to the Chutzpis?
Yeah, Chutzpis was the Turgamon. Now the question is, what is the Turgamon? Okay. So, very simply, the Turgamon had one of two functions. Function number one was that when they read the Torah,
for the hearing impaired,
right. But I want to explain. I mean that you know there are two different functions of a Torah.
Amplification system,
correct. That's the second one.
Okay.
The first one, I mean, how did they get the name Turgamon? You see, that's what I'm trying to explain. Turgamon means someone who translates. Mm-hmm. Okay, translates what? So the answer is that in those days they had the custom that they would read a verse from the Torah in Hebrew, you know, the original text, and then the Turgamon would translate it into Aramaic so that people would understand what the text of the Torah was. Okay? So that's how they gave the name Turgamon. But then the custom started, as we've already said, you know, that, you know, not every Rosh Hashiva, you know, was gifted with a voice big enough to carry to the further ends of the hall when you had many people over there. So he would speak to the Turgamon, and the Turgamon, who was blessed with a good loud voice, would then explain, you know, what the Rebbe was saying. And of course, in the meantime, Rebbe had a chance to rest his voice a little bit, to gather his thoughts about, and, you know, to decide what next to say. So Chutzpis was performing this particular function in the yeshiva that day. Okay? So they said to Chutzpis, the Turgamon, they said, I'm old. Stop. This is the way I understand it over here. The Omad. And he stopped. Of course, it could mean literally also maybe they said to him, stand up. In other words, stop sitting next to Rabbi Gamliel over there, but just stand up. But the effect is the same, whether you understand it one way or another. Okay?
Right.
Yeah. Amre, and they said to him, Ad kamat mitzare, how long are we going to continue to give pain to Rabbi Yehoshua? And nitzare v'desa. How long are we going to give, how long are we going to continue, the Nazis like to continue over here. How long are we going to continue to give pain to Rabbi Yehoshua? Barosh Hashanah Ishtakei Tziare. It says, last year on Rosh Hashanah, Rabbi Gamliel caused him pain. What was the pain? So, as I explained the last time that we met, when was it? It was about 3 weeks ago or so. It's been a long time in between. That in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, it's mentioned that, remember, you know, that how did they determine when Rosh Chodesh was? They determined it by having a sighting
of the moon.
Of the moon. And witnesses had to come before the Beis Din. And, you know, then they would ask some questions. As a matter of fact, Rabbi Gamliel was very skilled in this business, and he even had charts showing the position of the moon that he could quiz them. To ask, did the moon appear like this, did it appear like that, and so on and so forth, so that he could determine whether the testimony of the witnesses that they had seen the new moon was to be relied upon. And if it could be relied upon, testimony was correct, and in that case, the Sanhedrin would proclaim that the new moon, you know, this was Rosh Chodesh, and so on. Alright, so it so happened that an argument broke out between Rabbi Gamliel, between Rabbi Yehoshua as to whether it was Rosh Chodesh or it wasn't Rosh Chodesh. And Rabbi Yehoshua maintained that it was not Rosh Chodesh. So the question is about Rosh Hashanah. Okay? Okay. Actually, in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, it mentions the fact, you know, that he told them to appear on the Yom Kippur according to his calculation. Okay? And to appear with a sack, dressed in ordinary clothing, with a stick, and so in other words, all the things that, you know, we associate with being a violation of Yontif, which is Yom Kippur. After all, Yom Kippur is not just an ordinary Yontif, it's a Shabbat, Shabbason, you know, Sabbath, Sabbath. So he ordered him to do it, and Rabbi Yehoshua came, and he did so. Because he realized that, in spite of the fact that he may have thought that he was right, but he had to submit to the authority, the official authority, which was Gesson Raman Gamliel. Okay? Divachoros, and when it came to the question of a firstborn animal, the master, the Rabbi Tzodek, Tziarek. So again, in this business of Rabbi Tzodek, he again caused them grief. Now, what is the story? There we learn that Rabbi Tzodek, okay, had actually, you know, he had a flock, and it so happened that one of his animals gave birth to a firstborn. Okay? Now, what is the din concerning the firstborn? The din is that the firstborn had to
be sacrificed.
Right. It was sacrificed, and the Kohanim had it. Okay? They were to eat it. However, what would happen if, you know, the animal had a blemish? And in that case, it was not to be sacrificed, but said you could shech the animal and eat it. Okay? Alright, so in order to know whether the animal could be slaughtered, you had to know the difference between what we call a mum kavua and a mum over. A mum kavua means that this is a permanent blemish in the animal, and therefore the animal could not be sacrificed, and therefore you could shech the animal and eat it. Okay? But the mum over is simply a temporary blemish, and for a temporary blemish you cannot do it. Okay? And so what was happening? What was happening is that there were people who, you know, as we would say, amehoretz, the people who were not exactly talmidei chachamim. So they would make a blemish in the animal to make it appear, you know, that it was
fitting.
Right.
Yeah,
that the animal had a permanent blemish in it. Now, Rabbi Tzodok was, of course, a Talmud Chacham, and he knew what the answer was. All right? So he came first to Rabbi Yehoshua. And he said to Rabbi Yehoshua, tell me, this mum, you know, you have to have a Chacham who can paskin whether it is a mum kavua or mum over, okay? So he said to him, you know, take a look at this animal and tell me, do you think that the law that said, you know, that you're suspicious of someone, you know, who would make a blemish in the animal, whether that applies also to a Talmud Chacham or not? Because, as we said, it was as a result of the Ami Haaretz doing this, you know, that the law was passed against it, right? So Rabbi Yehoshua said to him, look, you're a Talmud Chacham, and I know that you're not going to be guilty of purposely making a mum in this animal in order, you know, to be able to eat it, okay? So, in other words, the rule does not apply to a Talmud Chacham, it applies only to an Amoretz. Then he came before Rabbi Gamliel, and Rabbi Gamliel said, nothing doing, whether it is an Amoretz or a Talmud Chacham, there can only
same
be
rule,
one rule, and you
rule.
Cannot have an exception to it. You know, people get the wrong idea. So, again, at that particular point, Rabbi Gamliel also made him stand on his feet. It's not mentioned here, but as I say, especially tomorrow over there, he also made him stand on his feet, you know, as a punishment for having ruled against Rabbi Gamliel's decision. Okay?
Well, I'm sorry, maybe I missed this.
No, yeah.
What Rabbi Sadak was trying to give an exemption?
He wanted to find out, right, whether this worm that was on the animal, mm-hmm. okay, was a mum over or mum kubla, okay?
Right.
All right, so since people were deliberately making mumim in the animal, right, in order that, the, you know, the, they wouldn't have to give it to the Kohen, so therefore, the question was, you know, I'm not going to do something like that. Does the ruling that says you're not allowed, you know, to rule, right? Oh. No, you're not allowed to rule, in other words, that this is a mum kavua, would apply, you know, to someone like me, or is it only meant, you know, to discourage the Amei Ha'aretz from making mums in the animal, making a blemish in the animal, okay? So Rabbi Yeshua said to him, "Look, you're a Talmud Chacham, and I know that you're an honest man, and so you're not going to be guilty of anything like that, okay?" And but Rabbi Gamliel said, "You cannot have one rule for the Am Haaretz and one rule for the Talmud Chacham."
Rabbi Gamliel was right. I don't even.
Yeah, of course he was right, but nevertheless.
Why?
In saying that he was right.
Why?
Because you know he cannot discriminate. That's a bad example.
Also, why there's another reason.
Go ahead.
Because Amdim Lefanecha, Tabitu Kirishayim.
Yeah, right. You'll be an Echo Kirishayim, right? Okay. All right, but this wasn't exactly litigation, okay?
Well, all right.
But all right, that's not a bad point that you raised.
I have the English translation of this.
Okay, there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos which says that when you have two litigants appearing, first of all, it says Al Tasat Spokir Dayon. It says don't make yourself like a lawyer. If you're a judge, don't become a lawyer too. Okay?
Yeah, I remember that.
And right, and then when the two litigants are standing before you, let them both appear in your presence as if they were wicked. In other words, don't show favoritism towards one as against the other. But when they leave, consider them both tzaddikim, even though one of them was wrong and one of them was right. But nevertheless, they accepted the din, they paid the damages, whatever it was. So in that case, consider them both equally as being tzaddikim. Okay? So he says, I mean, you know, in other words, if they come before the Rav, you know, the Paskin, they should be considered wicked. Okay.
Also, even a tzaddik like Rav Tzadok, which happens to have a very nice favorite tzaddik, Tzadok.
Yeah, he happened to be a very,
very
pious man.
Even he has to regard as, you know, you have to.
There are other Gemaras that speak about the great Tzidkus of Rabbi Tzadok, how he fasted the years prior to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash in order to try to avert the evil decree. And
he knew what was coming.
Yeah.
I have another question, which is, I guess I don't want to waste time, but this is more like a historical question.
Yeah.
What authority, besides a moral authority, did Rabban Gamliel have over Rav Yehoshua that would allow Rav Yehoshua to accept this humiliation? I mean, was there an economic hold? Was there a judicial or, you know, a governmental hold? I mean, I didn't quite understand that. I mean, I can understand, you know, Shemaya, but here you're describing, we're seeing really in a few lines a marida, a revolt, and I don't understand why was Rabbi Yehoshua so submissive? I mean,
I would say that, first of all, yes. Rabban Gamliel apparently ruled with an iron fist, okay? Now, where he was right, he was right. But nevertheless, if you rule with an iron fist, you're bound to create a certain amount of resentment, right? Now, particularly with someone who was a great authority such as Rabbi Yehoshua, and I mean, let's not poo-poo him. The halacha, as a matter of fact, about, you know, whether Meirav is Meshus or Chova follows Rabbi Yeshua in this case. Okay? Doesn't follow Rabbi Gamliel. But nevertheless, there is the business, however, that authority must be maintained. I mean, we have, for example, a rule that says Afrei Rabbi Mahatos, that you have to follow the majority decision. And while here it was not being put up to a vote or anything like that, so that, you know, but nevertheless, there is the idea, you know, that in order to maintain the discipline of halacha, so you have to have a clear-cut decision. You can't simply, you know, everybody making his own halachas. I mean, you have to have, you know, a definite pattern, a definite standard.
Make their own halacha.
Right. So that all these factors are in play over here. All right. Now, Rabbi Yeshua has already submitted to him the question about Yom Kippur, when he went and he appeared before Rabbi Gamliel on the day that, in accordance with his own point of view, was actually Yom Kippur and Rabbi Gamliel was going, but nevertheless he submitted to him. As a matter of fact, at that time, Rabbi Gamliel acknowledged him and hugged him and said, he embraced him and said, you know, that you are my master in halacha and everything else. In other words, Rabbi Gamliel was, you know, very happy with the fact that Rabbi Yeshua came and he gave him all kinds of kavod for doing it, but nevertheless he gave him the kavod because Rabbi Yeshua had actually got along with Rabbi Gamliel and had submitted to his authority. In the business over here about the Bechor, again, Rabbi Gamliel was undoubtedly right, but nevertheless the manner in which he afflicted, you know, Rabbi Yeshua, this left a bad taste in the mouth of everyone, because he made him stand on his feet all day long instead of saying, okay, look, this is my ruling, this is the way it is, and let's continue, you know, let's go on with what we're doing. But he didn't. He made him stand on his feet all day long. So,
all day long?
Yeah, all that day. Mm. So as a result, you know, this is already the second occasion. Now here comes the third occasion. And the third occasion is that he says, come on, stand up. And, you know, and he makes him stand up while he continues with whatever it is that he was discussing. All right? And, you know, the people felt, hey, three times is already too much already. That Rabbi Gamliel had no business acting so discourteously to Rabbi Yehoshua. So that this is what it is. This is why they tell the Targum, and they say, stop, stand up. And, you know, they said, you know, at common it's a raven azel, how long are we going to continue to cause him pain? Right? Last year he did it with, you know, the question about when is Rosh Hashanah, therefore, ergo, you know, when is Yom Kippur? And when it came to the story about the Bechor, the story about Rab Tzodok, he again did the same thing to him. So Hachinam, and here too again, Siyare. Again he has caused him pain. Tovin Avrei. So come, let's get rid of him. Let's remove him. Okay, let us remove him. So, okay, so they remove him, yeah? But then the question is, Man Nokimle? Who should we appoint, who should we raise, literally, you know, who should we appoint as the Nasi instead of him? Nukmin the Rabbi Yeshua. Should we make Rabbi Yeshua the head of the academy? Balmasehu. No, he's one of the, he's an involved party in this, so it's not right. Nukmin the Rabbi Akiva. How about Rabbi Akiva? Should we make him the head of the academy? So Dilma Anishle. So he said, no, maybe Rabbi Gamliel will get back at him, literally will punish him, the less lays Pusovais, because Rabbi Akiva doesn't have family prestige behind him. Remember the famous story about Rabbi Akiva, who was a poor shepherd, and he was an Amoritz, and it was only after he married his wife Rachel, you know, that she finally persuaded him, you know, to, the age of 40, to go and to learn, and all the difficulties that he had at the beginning, his chotzapnishka klept, as we say, you know, he couldn't remember which was the aleph and which was the base and things like that. So,
but he became
a great
Talmud Chacham.
Eventually he became a great Talmud Chacham, but he was sitting in the same cheder together with his son, you know. The little boy is learning Bo Ba Be,
and he's also learning Bo Ba Be too.
Until he finally was able to go beyond that stage, right? But the point is, he doesn't have you know, a prestigious family to fall back upon.
He didn't have the.
Yeah. Ella not been the Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, but let us instead raise Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria to become the head of the Sanhedrin. The Hu Chacham, he is a great Talmud Chacham, first of all. The Hu Ashir, and also he's rich. The Hu Asiri the Ezran, he's also a tenth generation to Ezra. Hu Chacham, how do we know that he's a Chacham? The Marshilei, because whatever Kasha you ask him, metaphorically, he can answer that Kasha. So this obviously is a sign that he, intellectually he's a great Talmud Chacham, okay? The Hu Ashir, and the fact that he is rich, the Islay Litluka Levei Kesar of Hu Osul Vafala. Because if he has to pay the expenses of going on a mission to the emperor in Rome, he can do it without, you know, any great effort, right? In other words, he has the bankroll for it, and also, obviously, he has the prestige. That when he goes there, you know, they expect it. In Rome, they honor somebody who has money. Yes, they do it sometimes in Jerusalem too, but...
I know a few places where they honor people just because they have money.
Even in Springfield sometimes.
Jerusalem for sure.
But... you know, he's a person who is rich enough, you know, to have influence even with the government authorities. Don't forget, I mean, they're under the rule of Rome.
He gets a seat at the Eastern Wall.
Right. Who are Cyril Ezra, and he is also a 10th generation of Ezra, the Islay's Chusovis, and as a result, you know, he has the merit of his ancestors. Valoy Motzi Onishlei. And Rabbi Gamliel will not dare to punish him. I mean, because, you know, Rabbi Elizabeth and Zahar can say to him, what, you're Yichus. You have to remember, what was the Yichus of Rabbi Gamliel? He had very great Yichus.
He was the grandson of Hillel.
Exactly. He was the descendant of Hillel.
Rabbi Gamliel,
right. But, you know, Rabbi Elizabeth and Zahar also was no slouch. He also had a good family ancestry, namely, he dates back to Ezra. So, you know, he's not going to be overwhelmed by Rabbi Gamliel, who says, you know, to him, what's your pedigree, you know? Because Rabbi Gamliel wouldn't ask him that. He knows, okay? Also, the Yomulei. So they came, you know, in other words, a delegation came to Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, and they said unto him, Nichalei lamar delevei resh b'sifta, tell me, would you please accept the honor of becoming the head of the b'sifta, the head of the yeshiva? Omaluhu, so he said to them, Ezel yimolei fi'in shebesi. He says, I'll go and I'll ask the people in my family. So he went and he inquired, he consulted his wife. Omolei, she said to him, Dilma ma brinunlo. Alright, so let's say you become a Nazi today, but what about tomorrow if they take the job away from you? So how will you feel, in other words? So Omolo, so he said to her, it's something even for a person for one day to make use of a very precious goblet.
Why is that in brackets?
Well, because according to, in some texts it's not there, okay? But it doesn't really affect the idea. Okay, he said to her, all right, you want to put in brackets, omit it? Okay. He said to her, one day, the chosid the mukra, you know, one day to have a precious goblet, and on the following day that this goblet would be broken. Of course, the idea is, you know, does it pay to have a precious goblet even for a moment, even though you know that the goblet may break the following day? Is it, you know, will you have great happiness from drinking, you know, from this precious goblet?
At least you have it one day.
Right. So, of course, you know, that is...
not having it at all.
Right. We don't understand, actually, what he's saying to her is, in other words, even to be a Nasi, to be the head of the Sanhedrin for one day, is better than not to be the head of Sunder heaven at all.
Rather than trust and never to be rubbed at all.
Right.
Well, I think what his wife was isn't precisely the idea of the attainment alone is better than obscurity, but whether his happiness with the attainment would match his disappointment or the sense of...
Yeah, we understand. You're right. Right. But his feeling is, yes, it pays, even for a moment, to enjoy being a king, a ruler or something, be the head of the Sanhedrin, okay?
Hmm.
To have this yichus, even for a day. All right, so she made another objection. Omrelay, she said to him, Les lochibusa. Look, you don't have any white hair yet. So how do you expect, right, how do you expect them to look up to you as a great Talmud Chacham and everything else if you're still too young, you're a kid in their eyes? So Havu Yoma Batman Yisrei Shana Hava, that day he happened to be 18 years old. Yisrachesh Leidisa, and a miracle happened to him, Va'adru Leit Man Yisrei Dori Chivusa. And lo and behold, 18 rows of white hair appeared on his head. So, Haina de Kama, Rabbi Elozer ben Azari, this explains then why it is said, and of course this is earlier towards the end of the first chapter, that Rabbi Elozer ben Azari said, Hare ani kiven shivim shono, he said, I am as one who is 70 years old. Below Ben Shivim Shana, but he did not say, I am 70 years old, okay? The rest of them remember, right? But I was not able to convince the others that they should say Yitzias Mitzrayim at night. Why? Because as we explained at that time, the third paragraph of the Kriya Shema deals primarily with Tzitzis. And then it has the secondary theme of, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, okay? So according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, granted that we would not have to say the third paragraph of the Shema if it were because of the tzitzis. Why? Because as we explained, tzitzis are not obligatory at night. Tzitzis are only on a day garment, not a night garment. Okay? But why do we do it? Because he says that the Pasuk says, L'man tizkes yom tzitzis l'meyat Messiahim kol yimei chayecha, that you should remember the your exodus, you know, the fact that you left Egypt all the days of your life. And he says, if it only said Yimei Chayecho, you know, you should remember the days of your, during the days of your life, then it would mean Yimei, in other words, Yomim, the days only. But the fact that it says Kol Yimei Chayecho, what is the Kol? The Kol is to include night as well as day. Okay. So that's what we learned at that point in the Mishnah at that time. Okay. But from the language that he uses, you know, kivem, like one who is. So this then refers to the incident that I'm mentioning over here, that he suddenly grew old enough in order to be able to qualify for the job. Tana, we learned, Oso hayom silakuhu l'shema pesach. Says that very day, you know what they did? They got rid of the doorman. And permission was given to the Talmidim to enter the base Hamedrash. Why? Because Rav Gamliel made the following proclamation. He said, "Kol Talmid she'ein tocho kevoro, any Talmid whose inside is not like his outside," in other words, who is not motivated by piety internally, as well as, you know, to the world appearing as a pious person, lo yikoneis to beis hamedrash, you should not enter the beis hamedrash. So in other words, he wanted to be very selective in whom he permitted to come into the beis hamedrash. He was afraid that, you know, there would be people who were taking advantage, they would cloak themselves in piety, but in reality they weren't worthy of being Talmidei Chachamim. This
also
was the philosophy.
The only one to determine this.
Yeah, of course, correct.
So
right. But, you know, I would imagine,
leaper.
Yeah, I mean, the Gemara does not imply, you know, that his motives were impure. They're willing to accept the purity, mm-hmm. but on the other hand, it runs counter to another principle that we had, and that is right at the beginning of Pirkei Avos, where it says, "Ha'amidu talmidim harbe," try to get as many people, try to create as many disciples as you possibly can. Ha'hu yoma, that very day, itvafsu kamo safsale. So many, many more benches were added into the base medrash. Of course, obviously, because, you know, students streamed in. Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, "Pligi bo Abba Yossi ben Tostai v'rabona." There is a difference of opinion between Abba Yossi ben Tostai and the sages. Chadomar itvasu arba meyosaf soli. One says that 400 benches were added. V'chadomar shva meyosaf soli. The other one says 700 benches were added. Havakor chol shadati Rabbi Gamliel. Now Rabbi Gamliel felt very bad when he saw this happening, and he saw the base medrash all, you know, filling with many, many students. Omar, and he said, "Dilma chas v'sholom, monati Torah Yisrael." Maybe God forbid, he says, by my insisting, you know, that only a Talmud Chacham who is tocho kevoro, in other words, I prevented the Torah from being propagated in Israel. In other words, there could have been many more people who were engaged in the study of Torah, and I prevented them from doing it. God forbid, Chas v'shalom. So Achazu Lei B'chalmei, they showed him in his dream Chatzvei Chivre V'mayon Kitma. Chatzvei Chivre means like white jars that were full of Kitma. Kitma means like ashes or smoke. Okay? In other words, what was the dream supposed to represent? The dream was supposed to represent the taka the way you said. The exterior is white. Mm-hmm. In other words, pious, right? Yes. But the interior is black.
Black.
You get the idea? In other words, yes, there were, in other words, this is what the dream says, there were people, you know, who really did not deserve, right, to be permitted to enter the Beis Medrash. But the Gemara now says, below he. But this dream really was not reality. Ahil is suvei date hu da'achsulei. This dream was only in order to make Rabban Gamliel feel a little bit better. That, you know, he shouldn't feel, you know, that as a result of his strict policy, he had prevented others from studying Torah. So they wanted to make him feel a little bit better. This is why he had this dream. Okay. Tana, we have learned also that Adius Bobayom Nishmei, that, you know, this whole Masechta, we've already had a quote before from Adius, or they also call it Bechirasa, in other words, the chosen Mishnah. This particular tractate was taught on that day. In other words, if you remember, I told you the nature of Adius is that different rabbis hated so-and-so, hated, in other words, so-and-so gave testimony that this and this and this happened, or that this and this was the ruling, and so on and so forth. And in general, we say that if it was, you know, if they gave testimony on that particular day, those decisions, nobody contested. They were accepted by everybody as being, you know, valid halacha, right? The Chol Heicho de Amrinon, Bo Bayom Hahu Yomahava. And wherever we find, therefore, in the Gemara that it's written Bo Bayom on that very day, then Hahu Yoma, that we're referring to that very day, the day when Rabbi Gamliel was deposed and Rabbi Elizabeth Azariah was asked to become the head of the academy. The Loha Yesoha Locha Sha Yesot Tulu Yoma Vez Habedra Shalom Pirshuha. And there was no halacha that remained in doubt. Tluya literally means suspended or hanging, right? In other words, you know, there were questions that they had not come to a definite decision about. So there wasn't a single halacha that was in doubt in the Beis Medrash Shelo Pirshuhu, which they did not then resolve. So they really did all kinds of tremendous things on that day. Not only that, the Yafar Rabbi Gamliel lo mona atzvum beis hamedrash afilu shoah achas, and even Rabbi Gamliel did not withhold himself, did not stay home from the beis hamedrash even for a moment. Shoah achas, literally an hour, but shoah achas normally means a moment. Okay. That none, and how do we know this? Because we have a Mishnah that says bo bayom, on that very day, bo Yehuda ger amoni lifnehem. A certain man by the name of Yehuda, who was a convert, and he was an Ammoni, an Ammonite, right? He came before them to the Beis HaMedrash. Omalehem, and he said unto them, Ma ani lavo bakahol, is it possible to accept me so that I could marry a Jewish woman? Remember what the din is. That the din is that for example the Edomi, the Edomite, we had this in the Gemara condition, the Edomi, the Edomite, or the Mitzri, the Egyptian, they are permitted, the third, the generation are already permitted to marry within the Jewish fold. prior to that, they would have to marry among themselves. Okay? But now they are permitted, right? The third generation can. But it says that as far as the Ammoni and the Moabi, then even the tenth generation cannot marry, right? So here he was an Ammoni and he wanted, you know, to be given permission. So he asked them, do I have the right, you know, to marry into the Jewish folk? Omale Rabbi Gamliel, Otsurata. Rabbi Gamliel said to him, you are prohibited, Labo Bakahol, you know, to marry, right? To marry, you know, a full, you know, an unblemished Jewish girl, right? Omar Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yeshua said to him, Mutar ato lebo bakahol. You are permitted. So we see that even though it was Bo Bayom, that very same day, both Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel are present, and they're still carrying on halakha discussions, whether it's permitted or not to permit. Omar le Rabbi Gamliel. So Rabbi Gamliel said to Rabbi Yeshua, he said to him, Halok for Nehemar, doesn't the Torah say Lo Yovo Adoni Movid Bikal Hashem, that an Ammonite or a Moabite is not permitted to marry? Yeah, to literally to enter the congregation of God. Omer Yeshua. So Rabbi Yeshua said to him, "Dechi Ammon and Moab in the common Yeshua." Tell me, he says, "Tell me, are Ammon and Moab still residing in their original lands?" Didn't Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, come? Or Bilbil is Kolho Umos. And he mixed up all the nations. Shenemar, as it is written, Vo'otir Gevulot Samyim, Vasir Sehem Choshesi, the Orid Kabir Yoshbin. This is Sennacherib's boast, as we find it in the book of Isaiah, that he says to the Jewish people, you know what I've been able to accomplish? I've been able to remove the various boundaries that separate people, right? And I've also plundered all that they saved for their future. Even their bank accounts are being took, right?
Pension.
Right, everything. Go'orid Kabir Yoshvin. And I brought low the mightiness of the inhabitants, all right? So in other words, what is the situation today? Since Sennacherib's time, there is no Ammoni or Moabi or anyone, or Mitzri, or you name it. In other words, all those original nations are no longer there, they're no longer in existence, and therefore any Ger who accepts the Judaism is... don't have to wait for the third generation.
Don't have to wait for the third
generation. No, it does not have to wait.
I see.
He can be accepted immediately, and he can marry into the Kahal. Yeah. That's the practical ruling. Yes.
Who has to wait for the third generation? Yamoni and the Edomite had to wait for the tenth generation.
The Adomi and the Mitzri were permitted to marry the third generation.
So now it's
the Ammonite and the Moabite, not even the tenth generation. Okay.
So now you're saying that any Geir
can marry now.
Now not have to wait.
Right. Because of this principle that Sennacherib mixed up all the nations, they're not living in their lands anymore, so forget about it. Those were ancient terms and are no longer applicable today. In this case, follows him again.
Now, I have another question that leads from this.
Yeah.
Every morning, well, usually I'm not here in the morning.
It's all right, David. We won't stitch.
All right. We're not taking attendance these days.
All right, thank you. The inhabitants of the land, the Hivites, the Perizzites, you know, that they shall be driven out, and then take the land. Okay. Now, is this reasoning, this pegging, does this logic also apply to the present situation where we don't consider the inhabitants that are now in Eretz Israel to be, you know, the
part of the nation?
Well, they're not Ammonites. Yeah, right. They're not. They're not. Definitely not. Yeah.
Okay.
They are not. And if an Arab should decide to convert wholeheartedly to Judaism, it happens sometimes, by the way. So, in that case, he would be permitted to marry a Jewish girl. There's no question about that. Yeah. Because all these restrictions that the Torah put, as we say, this is the point of this Gemara over here, that those restrictions no longer apply. The only one that they cannot marry, I mean, this we learned, they're not allowed to marry a Kohen, because the Kohen has to preserve his yichus, okay? But apart from that, any convert can marry a Jewish girl, or vice versa, or any woman convert can marry any Jew except for a Kohen.
Back to the third generation, and from the third generation, they could only marry other converts. Is that what you mean?
They could marry converts, correct.
They marry
or they could marry within their own folk. They were permitted to marry an Ammonite, or they were permitted to marry an Edomite or an Egyptian. Remember, the Torah singles out Mithri and Adomi. Why? There are special reasons. I mean, because the Edomite, right, he was a brother, Edom was a brother to Jacob, okay? So that therefore there is kinship. And in the case of the Mithri, it says, because you were strangers in his land. So even though, you know, they persecuted you, but still there was a time when they also treated you decently. So it's a special dispensation for those two people. Okay, now let me go a step further. The Ammoni and Moavi were singled out because they both acted very cruelly towards the people of Israel. But if it was any other nation, the Torah doesn't mention it. It could be from any other nation. Not only that, but the Chachamim gave and they said that where it says Ammoni and Moavi, it applies only to a male Ammonite or a male Moabite. But not not the Ammonia.
Because if an Edomite married another Edomite, and the second Edomite is still first generation, and if their children but if their child married another Edomite, which is all that he's allowed to marry, then the son-in-law would be a first generation, and then it would be postponed for another generation.
No, not at all.
Wait, who did Pinchas? It was after that that they said only the male Moabim.
She was not a Moabia.
Ruth,
Midianite.
I'm telling you. Midian. Okay.
Right. She was a Midianite. It's a different issue.
All right.
But the Torah doesn't say that they're not allowed to marry the Midianite.
Okay.
So they have to exact vengeance on them. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good.
Okay.
The Moabim just were the ones that
Balechem v'amayim baderech v'tzeitchem v'mitzrayim. This is what's written over there. In other words, they did not welcome you with bread and water when you left Egypt. And not only that, but also they hired Bilam in order to curse you and destroy you. So both of these things are mentioned in the Torah. Okay? But, as I said, it does not apply to the female Ammonia or Moabia. This is the reason why Ruth, the Moabia, was able to marry become the ancestors of King David. Okay? But the law of the Torah does not apply to other nations. And the point of the Gemara here is that even where the prohibition was mentioned in the Torah, it's no longer valid today because Amperev came and mixed up all the nations so that you can't tell who's an Ammonia and who's an Moabia, etc., etc. Okay. But anyway, the argument is still going on between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel over here. Okay? Yes. So, first of all, Rabbi Yeshua quotes to him the fact, that Sanherib himself says how he mixed up all the nations and removed the boundary so that there is no longer any distinction between one nation and another. They're all goyim, right? Not only that, but we also have another principle, and this is refolded porish, meruba porish. And wherever something is separated from the mass, then you always say that it follows the rule of the majority from which it came. Famous example in the Gemara is that if you have a town where there are 9 kosher meat markets and 1 treifa meat market, and for some reason or other you find a piece of meat in the street, don't ask me what it's doing over there, but the supposition is, on the basis of this, it's called the porridge from the porridge, that the presumption is that it's kosher. We had it, if you remember, also quoted in connection with foundlings.
With what?
Foundlings. Child, you know, we don't know who the father or the mother is. Remember?
But if it was found in an,
right.
an environment
find
where it was
an abandoned
Jewish,
child.
It goes through
right.
Through.
So if it were in a town, you know, where the great majority is Jewish, then we might presume that the child is Jewish, okay? But if it's in a town where, you know, the overwhelming majority are goyim, then we have to assume the child is a goyim, okay?
Preparing for the oven.
Yeah, right, okay? So this
right,
is this rule.
Right.
Therefore, if we say, coming back over here, call, you know, the porridge Ruga porridge, right? Then we have to say that the average goy is not what? An Ammoni or a Moavi. Because there are so many others, you know, who you know, are not bound by this. And therefore, this is the ruling. Well, at any rate, Omale Rabbi Amdias, who I'm going to say to him, Alok for Nehma, isn't it written, the Achre Chain? And then afterwards, Oshiva Shavus B'nei Amonim Hashem, I will restore the captivity of the children of Amon, saith the Lord. It's a pasuk taken from the prophet Jeremiah. Uchavor Shavu, which would mean, therefore, since, you know, Jeremiah lived long before us, then we have to assume that the Ammonites have come back to the land. So Amalei Rabbi Yeshua, yes. So Rabbi Yeshua said to him, "Alok for Neeman, isn't it also written, Vishavti Yeshivus Ami Yisrael, that I will restore the captivity of my people Israel, Va'adayin Lo Shavu? But in the meantime, but we still see that the Jews have not all of them come back there to swear." So when he gave this counter argument, so Miyad Hiti Ruhu Lavalakol. So they immediately gave him permission to get married. Omer Rabbi Gamliel, so Rabbi Gamliel said, Oil, the Hochi Haba, inasmuch as this is what the mice is, inasmuch as this is what's happened, Ezel Fayash say to Rabbi Yoshua, then I'm going to go and I will beg pardon from Rabbi Yoshua. I'll try to ask him to forgive me. He motto, they say, when he came to his house, so he saw that the walls of his house, the mashkorn, that they were black. So he said to him, from the walls of your house, I recognize that you are a charcoal burner or charcoal maker. In other words, what did they do? They took wood, right,
and
burnt it and made it into charcoal. And, you know, it was a very sooty atmosphere, right. And, of course, again, I want to recall the fact that no rabbi in those days, no Talmud Chacham, was a professional. You know, he had to make his living from other sources.
Can't
people worked for their living.
Can't you know offhand what that was used for, the charcoal?
They use the charcoal for, you know, for heating.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. So
yeah,
this was, as a matter of fact, even in the 19th century, you had many areas. You know, I've read this in French literature or other literature.
But on a mistake, they used only wood.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. But, you know, for heating their house or for cooking and things like that, you know, very often they use charcoal in order to start the fire or whatever, to create a greater heat, whatever it may be, okay? So people actually, you know, used to take wood and burn it and make it into charcoal, and then they used it. So Rabbi Yoshua says to him, Oiloi, Omalei, he said to him, Oiloi Lador Shatrapanisel, says, woe unto the generation that you are its head, you are its leader. Sheyat Oyodei Abitzaran Shatramil Yechafamim Bamehem Ispanis. Because Rabbi Yeshua answered, you know, Rabbi Gamliel said to him, oh, apparently you must be a charcoal. I can see that you must be a charcoal burner because of the fact that your house is so black. Okay. Woe to those who are black.
Not dirty, but black.
Yeah, right. So he said to him, woe unto the generation that you are its head, its leader.
Oh, boy. He really is.
Because you are absolutely unaware of the problems of the Talmidei Chachomim. How they're going to make a living, how they're going to find food. You live in your ivory tower, you yourself are well off, but you're not aware of all the suffering that Talmidei Chachamim have in order to try to make ends meet and at the same time, you know, study Torah. So Rabbi Yehuda said, Na nesi lecha, I submit unto you. Mecholi, forgive me. Lo ashkachte, but Rabbi Yeshua did not pay any attention to him. Then he said to him, Asay bishvil kavod abba. Then he said to him, do it, if not in my honor, do it in honor of my father. In other words, in honor of Hillel. After all, I'm still Hillel's descendant. So at least, you know, show respect by forgiving me. P.A.S. So he did. Okay? All right, I think I'm going to have to stop here simply because... No, I see. All right, go a few lines. I see a couple of two dots coming up. All right, we'll go to the end of the story. All right. Omru, so they, the Talmidei Chachamim said, Manezo v'leimel v'le rabbonim, who is going to inform the rabbis, you know, that the two of us have made up, okay? Omaluhu, ha'hu koveis. So there was over there a certain launderer, a laundryman, and he said, "Ana azilna, I'll go." Shalach lehu Rabbi Yeshua lebeit midrash. So Rabbi Yeshua sent him to the beis midrash, and this is what he said: "Man de lovish mado yilbash mado, man de lovish mado yemalei leman de lovish mado." Shalach matcho the ana al b'shei, which means the person who wears the cloak. Today we use the word mad in the sense of a uniform, but actually we already had it in reference in the Torah, the lavash hakohen mido bad, that you know, his linen garment. Okay, all right. So the one who wears the garment, okay. Yeah, the one who wears the garment, Yilbash Mada, should put on the garment. In other words, the one who, you know, who's entitled to wear the garment should wear it. And the one who does not wear it normally, right? Mm-hmm. Let him say to the one who has put on this garment, take off your garment and I will put it on. In other words, the idea being very simply that Rabban Gamliel has always been the Nasi, right? And therefore, he should tell Rabbi Elozer ben Azariah, look, this is, you know, the fact that you're the Nazi right now, this is not the usual thing, so please take off the cloak, right? But of course, this is the marshal of the launderer, okay? So, Amaduhu Rabbi Akiva, the Rabbona. So, Rabbi Akiva said to the rabbis, Ruku Gale de Lolesa Yadir Rabbi Gamliel, it's sorry the Rabbana. He says, you know what? Lock the doors, he says, so that the servants of Rabbi Gamliel should not come and bring pain to the rabbis. In other words, they are Rabbi Gamliel. If he doesn't get his job back, what is he liable to do? They'll send his goons to the beis medrash and they'll break the bones, you know, of the rabbis, right, over there.
Boy, the yeah. Violent people.
Right. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva said, lock the doors, don't let them in. So Rabbi Yeshua said, mutav the ekam ve'ezel adal gavay. So Rabbi Yeshua said, you know, it's better than that I had better go to them, you know, and let them know, you know, that we've resolved the issue and so on and so on. So also he came, Torah HaBodah, and he knocked on the door. Omalei, and Omalehu probably is what it should be, he said to the rabbis, he says, Maze ben maze yaze, v'sheino loy maze, v'lo ben maze, yom ala maze ben maze, meimecha meimahoro, v'afercha efer maklev. Alright, which means in plain English, let the one who sprinkles, who is the son of a sprinkler, sprinkle. However, I have to say, what is it referring to? The answer is the Kohen. In other words, let the Kohen, who is the son of a Kohen, continue to serve as a Kohen. Because what does he sprinkle? He sprinkles, for example, water. Or he sprinkles the blood of the sacrifice on the altar, and so on, all right? For example, it's written, we know, the Kohen, right? It's written, the Hizo is the Mo. Or the Hizah Kohen, and so on and so forth. Okay, so the one who has to sprinkle, let him. Not only that, but also this Shabbos, what are we having? It's our second Sefer Torah, Parsha Purim.
Oh, yeah, Parsha Purim.
Okay, so one of the rituals then of the Kohen is that he has to sprinkle this Mehatah, you know, the water of the Purah Adumah, upon the person in order to enable him to be cleansed, you know, his coming in contact with a source of impurity. Okay?
Then the coming will get be impure. But the one who sprinkles is going to become impure.
Okay, that's the one who handles the mechatos.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay. All right. But at any rate, the ideas we see then is let the one, you know, let the Kohen, who is the son of a Kohen, perform this priestly function, but the Shein or Le'mazav Le'ben Mazav, and that the one who is neither a Kohen nor the son of a Kohen, let him say to the one who is the Kohen, the son of a Kohen, right? Me'mecho me'mora. Let him say, actually it's the other way around, we should understand, although the wording is not very clear over here, but the idea is clear. The idea is, you know, obviously means let the one who deserves the position have the position, and let the one who doesn't deserve it, you know, yield the position, right? And in reference to the Kohen, he says, you know, you're the water, Meimecho, he says, your water is Meimeora, it's water which is found in a cave. What is the rule concerning the water that has to be used in the for the Efer Hapori, you know, for the red heifer to make the ashes?
What is the rule?
Is it rainwater or something?
The answer is it has to be Mayim Chaim. In other words, water that flows, real, okay? It has to be Mayim Chaim.
Chaim means life, so you mean
lively
water.
Living
water,
in other words, not stagnant water like water in the cave. Water in the cave is stagnant water.
The cave,
right?
The cave.
Right. So not only are you not fit, you know, to be a Kohen, but even when you undertake, you know, to do the job of a Kohen, your water is not the correct water. It's, you know, it's water of the cave instead of being Mayim Chaim. And also he says your afer, the ashes, are simply ashes made by burning a fire, not the real ashes of the Purah Adumah. So in other words, give back the job to the one, you know, who should be really the head of the academy. Okay? Omele Rabbi Akiva. So then Rabbi Akiva said, Rabbi Yeshua Nispayasta, said to him, Rabbi Yeshua, have you really made up with him? Are you content, you know, to accept his apology? Kluma sinu elo bishvil kroko. Look, isn't everything that we did only to show you honor? The Bokor, so I'll tell you what, tomorrow he says, Aniviator, you and I, Nashkim Lepisco, will wake up early, and go to his door, right? And Amri Hechinevat. And they say, you know, and so they said, but how should we do it? Nabre, can we take Rabbi Elozer and simply show him to the door and say, hey, you don't deserve to be the Nazi anymore? How are you going to do it? Gemire, didn't we learn a principle which is Malin Bakodesh V'Yein Moridin, that when you raise somebody to a position of sanctity, you do not then remove him from that. In other words, if you promote him, you cannot demote him if it's a position of sanctity. Nidro Shmar Chadashapsa Mar Chadashapsa. And if we say, okay, one will be the head of the yeshiva for 1 week and the other one will be the following week, then what will happen? They'll become jealous of each other. But let's work out this compromise. Rabbi Gamliel will be, he'll give the the dosh, in other words, he'll teach the lesson 3 weeks. Rabbi Eliezer ben Azaya Chadash Shabbos. Rabbi Eliezer ben Azaya will do it 1 week. The Hainu de Omar, and therefore we can understand the statement that we find in several places in the Gemara where it says Shabbos shall nihor yisof. Whose Shabbos was it, or whose week was it? Shall Rabbi Elozab and Azariah hoyisof? And the answer was that particular time this happened to be the week of Rabbi Elozab and Azariah. The Yosef Talmud, and who is the Talmud, who gave the report? That was Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Haba. It was Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Very, very famous rabbi in his own time.
This report we're talking about?
Who is the Talmud who asked? Whose Shabbos is it?
Oh, awesome.
Right. So they say it happened to be Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai who asked that. Okay. We shall continue from here next week. Yeah.
I understand that you're going to have a pleasure trip in a few weeks.
Yes. Yeah, we'll learn next week and I guess the week after that, yeah.
So that means the Shabbos before...
Let's see, what day is today? Today is the 6th.
Wednesday,
all right. So we'll learn on the 13th. No, the 20th.
I thought Wednesday.
Yeah, the 13th and the 20th we'll learn.
So not Wednesday Haggadol.
Not Wednesday Haggadol, no. That week, at this time, I shall be... Yotza Hashem aboard the Elal.
The Arabs.
Okay, first of all, I have to sell my chametz over here. Right. But then, as an extra precaution, I go to the Rav of the Shkuna over there. In Ramot.
The Rav who?
Every neighborhood has its official Rav. I mean, you can have 100 Rabbanim living over there. But one is officially the Rav of the Shkuna. You understand? So I go to the Rav of the Shkuna and I sell the chametz to him. I did this 2 years ago when I was there, and I'll do it again.
He told me that it was sufficient,
but nevertheless, he did it in order to make me happy.
You sell the chametz twice?
Yeah.
It's all right. You sell something you don't have.
Your question is, who does the Rav
then sell it to?
Huh?
The Rav has the goyim.
Yeah,
Yasser Arafat. Yeah, Yasser Arafat. He doesn't sell to
Yasser,
he sells it to Abdullah or somebody.
And you plan to react to Shabbos immediately after?
I'll be... The Shabbos... Okay.
Right.
They come out Russia. We're on Chof Ches, we're starting the new Inyan. Right, last week we finished that very, very lengthy story about Rabbi Gamliel and his disagreement with Rabbi Yeshua about Meir and how he shamed him and how the scholars protested and that they got rid of him. And then eventually, the Peshara, the compromise that they made, that they would permit Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah to preach. He would be the head of the Sanhedrin, so to speak, for one Shabbos a month. And the other three Shabbos would be Rabbi Gamliel. All right. Okay. All right. So the Mishnah begins. Now they're analyzing the last statement in the first Mishnah of this chapter, which said, "V'shal m'sefem kol hayom." So Amar Rabbi Yochanan said, "V'nikra posheya," that a person who waits to daven all day long, as the Chacham said, you're permitted to say Musaf, he is a sinner. In other words, what should he be doing? He should have davened
earlier.
He should have davened earlier. Don't wait. have the mitzvah to daven, so, you know, perform the mitzvah and don't delay and delay and delay, because you never know what may happen. Of course, the word poshea means a sinner, but, you know, we have different words for sin in Hebrew, okay? And this is why when the klap al chet, you know, so it could be al chatoyim, it could be shoyim, it could be doinos and so on. All these are all different types of sins, okay? Poshea in Hebrew implies negligence. It's a sin which comes about through negligence. And as a matter of fact, in the Gemara, they use the word poshea not necessarily in the sense of a sinner, but they also use it in the sense that, you know, the person was negligent in doing what he should have been doing, didn't do what was right. So if a person davens musaf later than the time that Rabbi Yehuda has suggested, namely later than 1 o'clock, then the nikra poshea, he is a sinner. Granted that he could daven, but nevertheless, he should have made it his business to daven earlier. Okay? Tana Rabbanan. Then our sages thought, and this we already had on a previous page, if a person had two tefillahs to daven, acha shel mincha v'acha shel musaf, right? Mm-hmm. One was mincha and the other one is musaf. So mispalel shel mincha. Then the chachom say that first he davens mincha, v'acha kach mispalel shel musaf, and afterwards he then davens the musaf service. Now, why daven mincha before musaf? The answer is shezu tadira. Vizu eino tadira. Why? Because this happens all the time. In other words, mincha you have to do every day in the year, whereas the case of musaf is not tadira. We only say it after all on Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh and on Yom Tov. That's it.
Right.
So we always have a principle that when it's tadir v'sheino tadir, in other words, if you have the conflict between that which is customary and that which is not customary, then in that case we say todir kodim. Todir always gets priority. So that therefore the Chacham said that if you reach that point in the day where you have to daven both mincha and musaf, then in that particular case first you daven mincha and then you daven musaf. Well, this I don't have to tell you. Number one, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with. And secondly, even from a practical point of view of halacha, granted that the halacha follows this, but nevertheless, from a practical point of view, is this what we will be doing or not? So we'll discuss that in a moment. Okay. At any rate, what is Rabbi Yehuda's objection? Rabbi Yehuda omer mispalel shel musaf v'yachar kach mispalel shel mincha. Right? He says first he daven musaf and then he daven mincha. Shezu mitzvah oberes. Why? Because this is a mitzvah that the time is going to pass. Shezu mitzvah sheino oberes. Obviously, mutav, according to him, remember, ends at 1 o'clock at Sheva Shois, right? Mm-hmm. And in that particular case, if you don't get around to davening musaf right now, you're liable to miss the time. You won't be able to daven musaf anymore for the rest of the day. So this is the reason why, whereas mincha, you know, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you have plenty of time yet to grab a mincha. David, did we lose you already?
Yeah, I think so.
According, huh? No. Most of we daven either on Rosh Chodesh, or Shabbos, or Yom Tov, right? Of course, Yom Tov includes also all Chol HaMoed. Every day of Chol HaMoed has a musaf service.
So Yom Tov.
Yeah. Torah lighting is a different story. Yeah. Naturally, every day that we say musaf, we also have to read from the Torah. This we know. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it makes a difference too, incidentally, as far as weekday is concerned. An ordinary weekday, how many aliyahs do we have?
Three.
But what is the rule as far as Rosh Chodesh or Chol HaMoed is concerned?
Four.
We have four, right. Because those are days upon which we say musaf, and since there's an added holiness to the day, this is why we have four aliyahs. Yontif, we have
five,
because that too is holy earth. Okay? Then we come to Yom Kippur. How many Yalias on Yom Kippur?
Six.
Right. Again, because this is the holiest of all the Yomim Tovim. But on Shabbos, it's seven, because Shabbos is considered even more holy than Yom Kippur in certain respects.
Really?
Yeah. You know, I mean, for example, if you violate Yom Kippur, I'm not talking, you know, if you're sick and you have to eat or drink, but if you deliberately violate Yom Kippur, this, the punishment is Pidei Shamayim, okay? Whereas if you deliberately violate Shabbos in the presence of witnesses after being warned, etc., 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 you can be sentenced to death by the Beis Din, you see. Of course, we don't do it anymore. But the fact of the matter is that this is it, you see. So that Shabbos, from this point of view, the violation of Shabbos is even more severe than the violation of Yom Kippur. Okay, questions.
What is the word Tadir?
Tadir means usual, customary. Right, it happens all the time. Right. Yeah. Right.
And who was Rabbi Yochanan? Was the first one who said this?
He's the one who said that if you don't say Musaf in time, then you are a poshea. In other words, you are a sinner, not because you can't daven Musaf afterwards. According to Chachamim, we said that you could daven, you know, all day long if you want, if you didn't have a chance to, you daven it. You understand?
But he wasn't the first one to say Zotadir
of his own. No. This already we find is in the Mishnah, right? This is a very famous thing. You realize, I mean, the question of korbanos and things like that we have all kinds of things, you know. The question is, which is going to take precedence in a case of a conflict? And our decision is that Todah Rishina, Todah is Todah Kodim. Occasionally there are some exceptions to it, but generally speaking, this is a principle by which we do abide. Okay? Now, I said about the Mincha. Today, if we knew that, you know, we had to daven Musaf, let's say, between 12:30 and 1, which is, you know, really where the crux is, or if you haven't daven, let's say, Musaf until 2 o'clock or something like that, what should you do? For example, on a day like Yom Kippur.
True.
When the services drag and drag and drag and so on.
It does not have to.
I don't say it has to, but I'm talking from a practical point of view, all right? So are we going to daven Mincha, let's say, if it's already 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we didn't daven Musaf yet. Are we going to daven Mincha before we're going to daven Musaf? Of course not. We're going to daven Musaf first and then Mincha. Why? Isn't this a violation of what we just said? That Torah Shem the Torah is Torah Kodem? But the answer is that with a congregation, you don't go on the basis as you would if you were an individual. The congregation, you go in the order in which it is prescribed. In other words, Musaf should precede Mincha. Okay? So this is our practice.
Where do we get the principle that you go with the congregation?
Congregation have certain rules.
Where do we get the principle that you would go with the congregation?
No, I've always seen several times it says, Tzibur Shani. In other words, it's different when you're davening with a congregation.
Doesn't mean that all congregations' foibles are correct either.
Right. Not discussing that. We realize that. But nevertheless, there is, you know, an added kedusha. If you could daven with a minion, there's added kedusha to the davening as compared to private davening. I don't want to disparage private davening. I mean, we all have occasions where we have to daven privately, okay? And certainly it's a mitzvah to daven. There's no question about that. But if it is at all possible for you to come and daven with a minion, then in that case, you really should try to make a minion.
A greater mitzvah.
Yeah. Saying your kedusha, you're saying your kaddish. I mean, there are things, you know, that you can say with a minion that you cannot say if you don't have a minion. So, and also, you know, we had earlier in the sechta, you know, that the prayers that we utter are more likely to be answered if we you know, join in together with others, because it's a certain merit that the congregation has that the individual doesn't have. The more, you know, that you get together and you join together and then you serve the Rebbeinu Shel Olam with a whole heart, so the greater is the merit of the congregation. All right, so let us continue right now. All right, at any rate, they were still arguing this out, okay? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan said, halacha, he said that the halacha is as follows, okay? Mispalel shel mincha, says first it up in mincha, v'yachakach mispalel shel busach, okay? So Rabbi Yochanan says that this is the halacha. What we said before, this is the halacha. Rab Zera, ki hava cholish begirse. So now they tell a story about Rab Zera. He says, when, you know, he learned and learned and learned, but sometimes he just felt weak after learning so long that he needed a break. So hava azil v'yosef apisro devei Rab Nosim Batubi. So what would he do? He'd go to catch a little breath of fresh air, so to speak, and he would sit in front of the door that led to the Beis Medrash of Rab Nosson Bar Tuvi, a famous scholar in his day, okay? And Omar, and he said, Ki chalfe rabbonon, when the rabbis will pass by, os ekum kamayhu v'akabel agro, then I will arise, I'll stand up in their presence, and I'll receive reward. From this, of course, we see that to show respect to Talmud Chochem, you know, you rise up in his presence, and also...